cool. Let's get started. So I submitted this talk long time ago, and yesterday when I looked at it, I was like, what did I do here? It's a bit weird. The first question is, I submitted it in English. I don't know if this is really necessary here. Do we have some people who don't speak German here in the room? Okay, we do. Okay, then it was good. Okay, then let's do it in English. Second thing is, I think my proposal was mostly talking about political things, but I thought it's a very technical audience here, so I added some more architectural technical things at the end to make it a bit more interesting for more people. So I did some modifications here. So I will talk about the digital sovereignty concept here, first of all, then a tiny bit about Nextcloud, and then why I think that we as Nextcloud are the best solution for solving digital sovereignty. And at the end, as I said, a little bit architecture for the more technical people here. So yeah, let's get started. My name is Frank Karliczek. I'm doing open source for a long time, since the 90s. For a long time, I was involved in the KDE community and a bunch of other open source projects. I'm doing more and more lobbying and in politics to promote open source and free software there. I'm a fellow at Open Forum Europe. That's an organization which fights for open source on the European level. I'm helping the United Nations with their open source strategy, but of course I'm mostly here as founder and CEO of Nextcloud. So as I said, I'm doing this open source thing for a long time, since the 90s, and at the 90s, the whole IT and open source world was not really political, right? There was no real connection to politics. This was just like, I don't know, I like to play with technology, I write like software, and it was just like fun. And of course, it's a good thing to do something where more people can benefit from. That's of course the open source principle. But at the end of the day, the overlap with politics was very, very small. But of course, this is changing now. There is one term that pops up more and more often, and this is data is the new oil. So what is meant here is that oil is obviously one of the fundamental building blocks of the old economy, right? This is like where most of the current world economy is running on, and a steady supply of oil is super important. And of course, we all know the countries where oil is coming from, and we also know all the wars and conflict that are triggered for that fight for the oil, right? And this is a big regions in the on the world are just affected by rich countries wanting to have more oil, right? And of course, if we say, okay, maybe if data is the fundamental building block of the new world, of the new economy, then of course the question is who controls the data and who controls the fundamental building blocks of our future. So we at Nextcloud, we did super long research, super complicated research for a long time with lots of people to do research. Where is the data? And we did a super complex visualization where it is. And this is the visualization. So so this is where the data is. So obviously this is Silicon Valley. A little bit north of it is Amazon and Microsoft. So this is basically where the building blocks of our new world is controlled and stored and governed. So of course, obviously it's a bit of a joke, this slide, but this slide is actually accurate. So the different bubbles are different cloud companies, and as we can see in the EU, we have a bit of a problem here, right? Because we don't really have these building blocks of our future in our hand. And of course you might say, yeah, well, we just get it from somewhere else. We get this nice Microsoft and Amazon subscriptions, and then we get the data, we pay a little bit for it, but what's the problem, right? We're getting other things from other places too in the world, yeah, you might say. So I always thought this dependency is not a good thing, for a long time people didn't really understand the problem, but now we have some changes in the world. This one, for example. And of course, now we really understand what the problem is with this dependency on other countries and governments and crazy people, which affects our future. So that's a bit of a problem. So lately we did some, little bit of research or a survey where we asked like our customers, our users of Nextcloud, hey, why do you use Nextcloud? And basically three things came up. So there's concerns about availability, cost, and security. So I think these are the main triggers why people want to have digital sovereign solutions as alternatives. Let's go through this a little bit. Let's start with availability. So first question of availability is the legal side. As you know, in Europe, we have very strict data protection laws, GDPR, and which says that everybody needs to protect sensitive data, especially if it's data from other people, right? And we all know that in the US, there is no such thing like a GDPR, right? And then you might think, okay, but if everybody has the responsibility to protect data, if I then store the data in the US, then it's not really protected, right? So I'm violating a law here by giving data that I need to protect to some other place, some other country where it's not protected. That's obviously a problem. And this would mean that you cannot use cloud services from the US at all. Of course, this was recognized by politics that this is a problem. And what did politics do? They created a piece of paper, which was the first version, Safe Harbor, said, it's fine. It's basically what it says. It's basically like, yeah, it's not really compliant. Yeah, data protection is weaker, but yeah, we have this contract and it says it's fine. Yeah. Obviously, this not really, it doesn't work like that, right? Max Schrems went against that and won at the highest European law court against that. And this basically killed the Safe Harbor Agreement. And then using cloud service from the US again was illegal. But of course, politics said, okay, no problem, let's just try again. We have done the Privacy Shield Agreement, which is basically the same piece of paper, a little bit different words, but same idea. And again, Max Schrems again went against it and won again at the highest European court, and again it was illegal. And then, of course, politics said, okay, no problem, let's try another time. And now at the moment we have the Data Privacy Framework in place, which is just the same idea again. So obviously we're all waiting for the third lawsuit here now, that the history is repeating again. But maybe this lawsuit is not even needed because other things are already falling apart. So part of this agreement here is that there is a court in the US which oversees this whole agreement. And Donald Trump lately fired the judges of this court. So this court is no longer functional. So, and again, this is like basically says that this is not really working here. And basically European politicians can at any point just decide, okay, like this is obviously not working and this is not no longer in place. And then it would be illegal for everybody in Europe to use US cloud services. So this is the first risk that our users have, see with US cloud services, and because of that, they use something like Nextcloud. So this is the first part of availability. Second part of availability is, of course, the very famous kill switch, right? Because we know that US companies has to follow US law, obviously, so Trump can at any time just decide to switch something off. And as we know, this happened like already, for example, with the International Court of Justice, which Trump doesn't like, so they cannot use Microsoft anymore, click, right? Very easy. So this is a risk like for everybody. This can be used in negotiations. Maybe Europeans don't do what Trump likes, and then it just threatens with switching something off. So that's, of course, a big problem. Next thing is this warning from Trump and from Vance, especially, who says, like, hey, if Europeans interfere with our nice companies we have here, for example, with stuff like Digital Markets Act or Digital Services Act or AI Act or GDPR, other things, if this is just if you interfere with our nice companies, then maybe we also go to war and, I don't know, increase the tariffs or something else, right? So this is really, this is part of the negotiations here, and this is a big problem. So availability of US cloud services is not clear and it's not guaranteed. There are lots of risks. Second point is cost. So what about cost of cloud services from the US? So first thing is, of course, tariffs, right? I mean, we all follow the craziness around the different tariffs which go up and down all the time. At the moment, tariffs only apply to physical goods. not to digital goods, but obviously this can change at any time. With the latest tariff negotiations between the EU and the US, basically the European Commission didn't put digital goods on the table, which a lot of people thought is a mistake, but it was just basically, cowardness, basically. Because it is possible to include digital goods, and then we would have crazy price increases in this tariff wars. The second thing about cost is, of course, when you deal with monopolies. We all know that Microsoft and Amazon, especially Microsoft in the collaboration space, has a monopoly. And if you have a monopoly, what can you do? You just increase the prices, like 40% beginning of the year, right? I don't know a lot of businesses who can just increase the prices by 40% just like that, right? A normal business would lose customers, but here you cannot migrate away. So cost is a big problem here. Then third area is security or espionage. So in the open source world, in the IT world, the whole question about security and espionage was discussed for a long, long time. And forever, it was part of some conspiracy theories. Yeah, the NSA might look into my data, but who really wants to read my emails? They're just boring, so this is not really a problem. But nowadays, we really see that it is a problem. I mean, you can totally imagine that someone from the US government, as part of some negotiations first, let's see what the European Commissions or the Chinese or the Russians or whatever talking in their Teams chats as preparation for the meeting. And we already know what the negotiating part from the other side is. So just listening to the video calls or reading the transcripts of the video calls, then you know what's going on. Also, if you look at the NSA website, you see that the NSA is not only responsible for fighting terrorists, they're also responsible for protecting business interests. Like Boeing, I guess, has a big interest in to know what Airbus is doing, right? So this is totally on the table today. If you also would see what Elon Musk did at the beginning of the year with connecting to all kinds of databases to get government data out of that. So the whole espionage thing is totally not abstract, or this is a total real thing. So we really have to know that. We are working with lots and lots of customers and users who use Nextcloud especially because they need to protect their data. So these challenges, they can be summarized under the term digital sovereignty. I really like this because, as I said, I'm personally fighting for open source and free software for over 25 years. But open source was always like just some licenses, some boring things. I mean, what can be more boring than software licenses, right? But the important thing is it gives you the freedom and gives you control over your digital lives. And this term digital sovereignty communicates this a lot better than when we talk about the GPL license. But at the end of the day, it's the same, right? So digital sovereignty is like super, super important. So now I want to talk a little bit about Nextcloud. Let's quickly go through some advertising spot with some features, and then later I will explain why this is the answer to this question. So with Nextcloud, we have the latest version 10 released a few weeks ago. Nextcloud is, of course, I guess most know it. It's a collaboration suite. It's an open source on-premise alternative to Microsoft 365 and to Google Workspace. Because of that, it has similar components. It has files for the file sync and share part, chat for talk for chat and video conferencing, groupware, mail, calendar, contacts, and Office for Office documents, all under the umbrella name of Nextcloud Hub. And again, everything on-premise and open source. Let's quickly go through that. This is Nextcloud Files. This is the files management part where you can upload and download your files, share it with others. It also has advanced features like end-to-end encryption, for example, or file conversion or templating and everything so on. Then we have, of course, mobile and desktop apps for iOS, Android, Mac, Windows, and Linux to synchronize your files. You get push notifications, also support end-to-end encryption, virtual file system, and so on. Then we have Nextcloud Talk. This is basically the open source alternative to Teams. So you have your group chat or one-on-one chat, and you can upload your files and edit them collaboratively while doing the same conversation and so on. Then, of course, you can click a button and the video call starts. Then you have basically a video conferencing system, again, with advanced features like end-to-end encryption, call recording, live transcriptions, for example, telephone dial in and dial out and everything else you expect. Then there's a calendar. which can use the usual calendar features and synchronizing sharing with your phones and your desktop. It also has nice features like an exchange connector. You can connect to your legacy systems there. Then we have a mail application, all again with end-to-end encryption, GPG and S/MIME support, newsletter management, AI features, like, for example, automatically detect if your email needs a follow-up or is important and so on. Then there's a contact management, again, synchronizing with your phone and your desktop. There's a small Kanban project management tool that is very popular. And then it's, of course, the Office component, where we have different integrations with different Office backends, where you can edit your Office documents collaboratively with different cursors and different people at the same document. Then we have AI features, or sorry, we have two nowadays. But it's actually quite cool because this is not just isolated a large language model, but we have this integrated into Nextcloud. So if you ask your chatbot or your AI system, hey, what is the latest information about FOSDEM? It can actually access my own data, go through my mails, go through my chat messages, can go through my documents, collect all the different information and give you a nice answer. So this is actually quite useful. And the latest feature we launched this year is an assistant support, where you can tell the AI, hey, can you please write an email to my colleague, and can you please attach the latest support ticket, convert it to an Excel sheet, and it does all of that automatically. So that's actually quite cool. We're the only ones who can do this in an open source way. On-prem. Yes, everything is on-prem. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's actually a good point. A lot of companies do that by connecting to OpenAI, which is like, yeah, great. No, everything is open source, everything is on-prem, exactly. And then the last component is Nextcloud Flow. This is a workflow engine where you can model all kinds of actions that you do in your Nextcloud and connect them all together in a graphical way. And it's actually very nice for automation processes in businesses. Okay. Now you say, okay, this is all great. This all looks like Microsoft or Google or the others. And why is this now exactly better? Nextcloud is just another company. We want to get rich, want to become the next Microsoft, and then it's the same problem again. So why is this really different? So why is this fundamentally better than SaaS cloud solutions from the US? And this is something that a slide that I didn't show for a long time because I thought it's obvious, but I'm getting the question more and more, like, okay, you just want to become the next Microsoft. Why should we trust you? Why is it better? Now, I added these two slides now to explain this, while a solution like Nextcloud is fundamentally different and better. So the first is, we don't host any data. Right? Microsoft and Google and Slack and Zoom and so on, they keep your data hostage. Right? They have the data in their systems, and it's really, really hard, in a lot of cases, impossible to get it out. They keep your data hostage. So again, this is why Microsoft can increase the prices by 40%, because it's impossible to migrate Teams to some other solutions, for example. There's just no API to export full team conversation. It doesn't exist. So data is hostage, and in our case not, because we don't have any data, we don't have any files, we don't have user accounts, we don't have any password, we don't even know who's using Nextcloud. So this is why it's fundamentally better. Second point is Cloud Act is this legislation which basically forces every US company to comply with US law, even if the data is stored outside the US. Right, if you read the advertisement from Google and Amazon and so on, you're saying, yeah, we have these European data centers, no problem, the data is in Europe. Yeah, great, the Cloud Act still says that the US government has full access to everything. Obviously, in our case, it is double not true. First of all, we don't even have the data, and even if it would be, we're a European company. So this is fundamentally better. The third one is maybe a bit special, but I think this is exactly the right audience here for that point is, so at Nextcloud, we don't have a contributor license agreement. Basically, everybody who contributes to Nextcloud, and these are thousands of people, keep their own ownership of their own code. The only agreement is that everybody who contributes to it needs to provide it under the same free software license. But the ownership stays with the person, which means that the Nextcloud source code is not owned by the company. The Nextcloud source code is owned by thousands of people completely contributed and distributed. And this has the effect that de facto, the license can never be changed. Right? We all know the problem of that some open source companies decided after getting some venture capital or going to the stock market, I don't know, let's maximize our profit and let's change the software license to some not open source software license anymore. Right? Cannot happen with Nextcloud. It's impossible. Fourth point, code audits are possible. So again, you don't know what Microsoft and Google and others are doing with your data. You don't see the software. There's no way to look into it. Right? With Nextcloud, you can look inside the source code and you can check if there's a backdoor. You can check how everything works. And of course, some people say, yeah, well, I cannot do that. There are millions of lines of code. Who can read all of that? Well, you don't have to because others already did it for you. Right? It's not necessary that everybody audits the code, but some of our users did. So you have the third-party guarantee that everything works as advertised. And then the fifth one is also interesting, maybe, again, weird for a lot of people, but great for this audience. So I'm representing Nextcloud GmbH, which is a company. And I see ourselves as the steward to drive this software project forward. We employ a lot of people, and we have our own ideas in what the direction should be, and we drive this project forward. Because we think we do it in a way that you as users like. But if we drive it in the wrong direction, if we do some bad decisions, anyone else can fork the software and drive it in the right direction. Right? So we cannot really take you as users hostage. Right? We are trying to make the good decisions, the right priorities, but if someone disagrees, that's not a problem. You can change course. And of course, not everybody maybe should fork it, but someone will. If you're really doing the wrong things, someone will fix it. And that's again the fifth point where Nextcloud is fundamentally better than the US software services. Then I have more. We always use open standards for everything. So we have ActivityPub, WebDAV, CalDAV, LDAP, all the usual standards we support. We only invent our own APIs, our own standards, if something that doesn't exist yet. One example is I have this later with the Open Cloud Mesh, for example. This is a federation thing. I have some slides about this later. This was something we invented. And then later turned into a standard. But at first, we did it ourselves first, and then later turned into the OCM standard, which is now a cross-vendor standard. But it was first invented because it didn't exist before, then by us, but now it turned into an open standard. Whenever open standards are possible, we fully support that. Then open file formats, obviously, right? If you create a node in Nextcloud, it's a markdown file, right? It's not some obscure JSON database, whatever thing that no one understands. It's just a standard markdown file. Same with ODT formats, same with everything else. Then obviously, again, obvious for this group here, but we don't have any advertising and we have no tracking in the software. Again, something fundamentally different to big tech cloud services. And if we would, everybody would first see it and can remove it, right? So you don't even have to just trust me, it's guaranteed. And then the last point, we also care a lot about energy consumption. So we worked with the German authorities for many, many years, actually, to move this Blauer Engel, some might know it. This is a quality sign, which is usually used for, I don't know, fridges and washing machines, kitchen appliances. And I and others thought that software is really a big energy driver nowadays, so that this sign should be extended to software. And again, we worked with the authorities, and we actually then happy that in beginning of the year, we were the first cloud software who got this certification. And we have some systems in place where we always like monitor the energy consumption of the software. For example, we promise that every release reduces the energy consumption and not increases it. And we have some automated systems for that in place. Again, this is something that we really care about. And again, you don't have to trust us. You can measure this yourself. Everything is open source. And again, this is something that we are fundamentally better than big tech. Big tech at the moment is like buying nuclear power plants for the AI stuff. Great. Great idea. We actually care about reducing the energy footprint. So next thing I want to say is there's often a misunderstanding that Nextcloud is a monolithic software. You look at all the features I presented earlier and you think, oh, this is just too much, I don't need everything. Some things are nice, but other things I don't care about. It's often a misunderstanding that this is everything is one big monolithic blob. It is not. Nextcloud is actually highly flexible. If you do a default install of Nextcloud, if you just take the default server, just install it, it has like 30, 35, I think, modules enabled by default that you can also selectively disable if you don't like them, and you can enable others. So it's highly, highly modular. So the core functionalities is, as I said, Nextcloud files for file sync and share, Nextcloud talk, chat, video conferencing, groupware, mail, calendar, contacts, Office, of course, then the assistant, and Nextcloud Flow, the workflow engine. These are basically the core components, but again, you can very, very selectively switch them on and off and configure them as you want. But of course, we are also working together with an ecosystem. So we actually have many, many connectors, I would say connectors to most relevant open source projects out there, where we have connectors like to Moodle or to some whiteboards or to GitLab or to Mastodon and so on. So it's a really highly flexible system. So it's a misunderstanding that it's monolithic, it's actually the absolute opposite. Next thing I want to talk about, because it's very, very important, especially for me, I mentioned it already a few minutes ago, is the concept of federation. So federation is like, for me, again, very, very important. It's basically comes from my history, like in the 90s, where open source was basically on my computer, right? It was something like the cloud didn't exist in that way. It was, everything was local, my data was there, my files were there, the applications, everything was local. And now, later, we saw the trend to cloud computing and software as a service, where basically everything moved to a central, to central places, right? We have now, as I said, Microsoft 365, which exists only once by Microsoft. Same is with Dropbox, with Slack, with Zoom, with Facebook, with everything, right? Everything is like centralized systems where usually a company, or always a company, controls the application and the data in the middle, and you have all the users around it and they connect to the central system, basically. Right? And this, is, of course, gives these companies huge amount of control, which is really, really a problem. So Nextcloud is already a little bit better, because Nextcloud exists not only once, but many, many, many times. Actually, we as a company decided to never offer Nextcloud hosting at all. This is just also one of our fundamental principles, because then this instance might become some kind of the official or biggest or central instance. We don't want that. We built the software. You can download the software for free from our website. You can create your instance, and then you have your little or not so little cloud application service there. And this is already a lot better, as you can see. But of course, if you look at a picture, you think, okay, great. Now we have lots and lots of islands, right? We have lots of islands. How can we all work together? Because at the end, it's collaboration software. You want to work together. Maybe if this is like my university, this is a service provider, or this is a Raspberry Pi at home, and this is another like big company, we still want to work together somehow, right? And this is what we are solving with the concept of federation, because we make it possible that different servers actually talk to each other. And I think this is a very, very important principle. So someone who is like using Nextcloud at the university can collaborate with someone using Nextcloud at some other instance, just as it would be one system. Okay. Then you look at this, this is like really complicated, right? Who can build a system like that? Is it like completely crazy architecture? Well, actually not. This is like how most of the internet was designed for. This is exactly how email works, right? Email works in a way that there are lots and lots of email servers on the world, even from different vendors and different clients, and we can all send each other emails, right? And there is no central email server in the world. Email is not even owned by a company, it's just a standard. So this type of federated communication and collaboration is not so crazy at all, it absolutely works. And again, this is something we invented, and nowadays it's a standard that different software products support. Let's give you some examples. Let's start with files. So This is of course Nextcloud files. Here in the sidebar, you can decide to share like a file or a folder or something with another person. You can share this with someone on the same instance. You can send it by email. You can send it, create a link with it, and so on. But you can also type in the ID of a user on a different server. The logic is very similar to email. It's always user at instance to address them. And you can say, hey, I want to like share this like with, I don't know, Jim at University of whatever. Right? And what happens then is that one, or my Nextcloud service, pings the other Nextcloud server, say, hey, here's a share request. Do you want to accept it or not? And then you have this connected. You have a folder on both sides. If you throw in a file on one side, it comes off the other side and the other way around. So you have basically a shared folder, as you know it, with a normal Nextcloud or from Dropbox or whatever, but actually across different servers. And this is something that is quite powerful. But of course, the question is, how do I know this ID? And we have systems for that. We have a lookup server where you can, as a phone book, can register yourself, and then people can find you, very similar to other systems. So we can just make this very, very convenient. But of course, we extended this to other things. For example, in Nextcloud Talk, you can also chat with people on different servers at the exact same way. You can invite other people, and then they're all together in one chat room, but you're not really on the same server. But you can still have a shared conversation. In the latest release, we extended this to video calls, so you can also like have video calls with people on different instances. And because you have this notification system, you can also like call people on other servers. You can say, hey, I want to call this user at this instance, and then my server sends a ping to the other server, and this other sends a push notification to the client, and then the phone rings. Right? You just click on it, and then you have a call, but decentralized, without a central instance. I think we're the only ones who can do it like that. And again, you can extend this also with telephone support, with SIP bridges, so this even expands to normal phone numbers. So this is quite a unique feature, in my opinion. So now I promise to talk a little bit more about technology, because it's a technical event here. So I want to talk a little bit about scalability. So scalability, again, is very, very important for Nextcloud, because, as I said, we want to be the alternative to these big tech companies, and obviously they have billions of users, so we need a system that actually scales very, very well. So actually we want to scale like from one user at the moment to the biggest instance we have at the moment has 20 million users. So this is basically the current range, but actually I will show it later that 20 million is far from the limit, but this is the instance that is online at the moment. So I want to talk about like three different architectures now at the moment, from very small to middle to very big now. Let's start with small. The recommendation is that you use something that we call Nextcloud All-in-One, AIO. This is a Docker container image that you can just download, and it basically has all the core components built in. So it's actually in 5 minutes you have everything set up, and it comes with all the components. It has the video conferencing, chat, the mail interface, the groupware, with push notifications, with all the high performance backend components and the backend, basically everything you expect. Because Nextcloud is, of course, the goal of Nextcloud to be very, very easy to install. But to be honest, we have not so many third-party systems nowadays, it's actually not so easy anymore. It's still possible, most people do it. But if you have something like, I don't know, I would say up to 100 users, then this would be the recommended way. You just need to configure everything, just download it. It also is very powerful, because it has like updating just with one click built in. It has backup built in. You can backup one Nextcloud to another Nextcloud. It's just like super easy. That's a question. Yeah, it includes Collabora. It has like every feature I showed earlier, the full Nextcloud hub. It's, and you have it installed in like 2 minutes. Is everything in it. Yeah. So this I would say is like the recommendation for small setups, which is like for most people. Then let's talk about medium size. Medium size, I would say, okay, there's a step in between. Of course, you can have a standard Linux server and a database and something, but that's like standard and boring. I would say medium is like have a cluster of different application servers. And there we just use a standard architecture. It's like most web services in the world. We have different application servers with a load balancer. And you have some backend services like for storage, database, caching, and so on. And this is basically the standard way, I would say, for most people who have like up to, I'll show it later, a few million users actually work with that, but like a standard setup. We have some special components here. For example, the Torque high performance backend, a push proxy, and there's also another one, the Files high performance backend, because there are some limitations in the PHP stack, for example, WebSocket connections, and there we have some special components to do that. So the high performance backend, for example, is something that keeps open connections to all clients, which has like some benefits so that you always have a automatic refresh of the web, not refresh, but update of the web interface. Something happens, the desktop client don't have to pull for changes all the time because it gets a notification if something changes, so it, which reduces the server load and increases the scalability. So this is a nice component. It's also in the all-in-one, by the way, which is recommended. So this is an architecture that scales to lots of users. So this is a customer of us, the Magenta Cloud from German Telekom. This is a white labeled Nextcloud. They have 4.3 million active users. And this works with this architecture. It's actually a Kubernetes setup. And they actually do it in the native nice way, where they basically at any time spin up new servers and shut them down if they're no longer needed at runtime. And again, this runs with like a Kubernetes setup with a standard cluster, with a load balancer, with a standard Galera database cluster, 4.3 million active users. This is what I would call a medium architecture. Now we have the big architecture. So, because there are some scenarios where this is not enough. For example, if you need to have more than one data center. So maybe the data center is the limitation, right? Maybe just the uplink of the data center is not enough. We have one customer, I mentioned it earlier, who has 20 million users, and they use something that we call the global scale architecture. You can basically think about it, it's a cluster of clusters. So the idea is that you have different hosting centers, each of them have a Kubernetes setup, but there are different data centers, in this case on different continents even. So the idea is that you have a component called a global site selector, because obviously you have one URL. Right? You go to this URL, you log in, it asks something called a lookup server. Hey, where is this user? Ah, this user is in Argentina, or this user is in Mexico, which is real world examples. Yeah, and then redirects to the right site. These different sites can, of course, with the federation concept I showed you earlier, can collaborate, right? You don't even notice. They're just like the same users with the lookup service. You can find the people on the different instances. It's just you don't even see a difference. And they can do the collaboration and the sharing like between the different sites. And the lookup server basically controls where the user is. And there's another component like the balancer who can move at runtime users from one site to another. So it can basically say, okay, this employee no longer works in Hong Kong, this works now in New York, so maybe I should move the data around. Or maybe this site is overloaded, let's move a few thousand users to the other one, which can basically move the users between the sites. And this is an architecture, I would say, for more than 5 million users, 20 million users in production. And with this architecture, I honestly don't really see a reason why you cannot add like 20 more sites here. So this really scales to a global level. Additionally, we also improved the architecture in other areas, of course. For example, that gets a bit technical here, there is a limitation in the way database clusters work. So in a normal setup, you have Nextcloud servers talk to database servers, and the database servers, the cluster replicates between them, right? So the problem is that until now, this is all synchronous replication. Because if one request goes to this database, writes something in there, and next request goes to this database node, it needs to have the data which is written there. So it expects that if you write something in a database, that it's actually there. So you cannot really have asynchronous replication. And with the latest release, we improved that. So we don't really have this limitation anymore. So the code doesn't expect, if you write something in the database, that it's there immediately. It's fine if it shows up 2 seconds later. Which means this limitation to only have four master database nodes is lifted. So you can basically have unlimited number of database nodes where you can just read as use as read only. So that's an important improvement here. So now I'm done with my technical blah blah here for the summary page. I want to say that digital sovereignty is absolutely needed and it's also possible. I think we are the only true Microsoft 365 and Google Workspace alternative because we have all the full suite here. We are a stable product. We don't do any rewrites. I think rewrites are a mistake because you just do the same mistakes again and need to fix them again. We are a big fan of incremental improvement. So we improve the architecture, as I showed you, constantly. In latest release, Vue.js database sharding as slots, it's always like reinvented basically, but we are not throwing anything away. So, and it's of course scalable to many, many millions of users. So thanks a lot. This would be the end of my presentation. Again, I tried to come from the political side to the technical side. I hope there was something in there for everybody. And because I was fast, I still have time for questions. Not sure I understood. So the idea is that different organizations have different Nextcloud servers and need to be connected to the internet, of course. I mean, if you run it like privately on your private network, you cannot collaborate with others because you're behind a firewall. But if you're on the internet with a public domain name, then this would be the address. Yeah, it needs to be public, yeah. I mean, that's also something that I think we are really. Huh? Okay. Yeah. So the question was if we can invite someone to an instance to collaborate. Yeah, that's also something I think that's a lot better than Microsoft because there you need a license or it's nagging you to create an account and so on. So there are different ways to do it. First of all, there are like public links you can send out to chat rooms, to video calls, to shared files, to deck conversations, to calendars, whatever. They're always like public links. You can also protect them with a password if you want or not. Or you can say, I want to create a guest account. There's an option to create a guest account, which is then counted to your quota, so it's your responsibility. An admin can always create an account, but you as a normal user can create a guest account, and then you're responsible for this person, and you can give them some of your quota, and you can also restrict the permissions. The admin can restrict the permissions, and you can also, so it's very flexible. To answer the question, yes. Okay. Yeah, we do this if it's possible. For example, we have a concept called external storage where you can mount, for example, Dropbox or OpenCloud or an FTP service or whatever, and as a subfolder into your Nextcloud, this works. We also have it for other things, like you can use an Exchange server as backend for your calendar, for example, if you want to implement that. So I like the concept, but it's like limited, right? I mean, it's for project management doesn't really exist, for Office does not really exist, but whenever possible, I think I like the concept, yeah.
How do you do authentication and protect against adversary in the middle and phishing attacks?
Lots of things. So first of all, we have some the question was how to protect, do authentication and how to protect against malicious attacks. So first of all, there are, like, I would say, all relevant identity providers can be integrated. XAML, Shibboleth, LDAP, OpenID Connect, that's all, we have connectors for that. Then, of course, we have our own two-factor authentication. You can enable additionally, maybe the IDP has this already built in, and if not, we can also provide a IDP, again, with TOTP or with our own push notifications or SMS or email or whatever. So you can combine this. And then we can also have, we have our own brute force protection built in. So maybe you have your own firewall, we can do that. But if not, Nextcloud can also do brute force protection for all the relevant endpoints. Yeah, so I think the answer is we can do that, but lots and lots of options. Yeah.
How do you authenticate that?
So the idea is that if the admin gives Alice the permission to share the file, which the admin can restrict, then Alice can send, like, basically this invite to this other person, and then they exchange tokens, and these tokens are used then for authentication, and this is the tokens they are using each other. Not? Good? How would you do it? Okay.
On the political side, most schools and universities in Germany are very proud to be Microsoft partners. You see it at a lot of schools and universities. The first thing they tell you is, we are proud Microsoft partners. And how do you, or what do you do to try to change that so people get actually educated on your system and not on Microsoft?
I mean, as I said in the beginning, I personally talk a lot with politics, and we do a lot of marketing and PR around that to create awareness about this problem. But to be totally honest, my effort is nothing compared to what Donald Trump is doing at the moment. It's really helping us. So I think I see the awareness rising all the time, basically. It's true that we still have a lot of proud Microsoft users, lots of them. But I see that times are changing.
Yeah. Regarding functionality over here, how do you decide when to connect to something and when to build it yourself? Because I have a feeling that you build some things that already exist, maybe they integrate better, and to other things you just use what is already there.
If something good exists, we always use it. For example, for Office, there is Collabora Online. That would be crazy to build this ourselves. We just do use this. Or with for the email backup, of course, we work together with Dovecard because it's a great mail server. So if this exists, we always have it. If it does not exist, for example, lately we had to build our own open source whiteboard because there was just no whiteboard, which was completely free from front end to back end. So we had to do that because of requirement. Also with Nextcloud Talk, you might think chat exists before, but it actually did not in that way, so this is very unique. But if something exists, we, as I showed you the chart earlier, we are big fans of collaborating with others. But yeah, sometimes it's needed to do it yourself. Yeah.
How viable is it to use it as a component of another system? Like, is there a useful API, for instance, we could use to use the file component as a storage backend to something else?
Can you repeat again? Use the file backend for some other system?
Yeah. Basically, we have a system. We need to store data for it. Like, could we manage Nextcloud to do whatever we want it to do?
Yeah. Yeah, there are APIs for, I mean, the basic file management is WebDAV, which is the standard. There are additional APIs with the OCS API, like for accessing sharing and versioning and stuff like that. So that's totally doable. Actually, we have some users and customers who use Nextcloud only as the backend. So that's totally doable. Yeah.
Hi. How do you convince companies that are already using M365 or Google to convert to Nextcloud?
Good question. You tell me. No, it's usually a conversation. then often they are like skeptical, does it really work? It's just like this weird little open source thing. Is it actually really doable? Then we do a lot of proof of concepts where you say, okay, let me try with one department. And then you say, ah, people are actually happy. It's actually working. And then it's spreading and growing in the organization. So that's how it's usually working. But you have to overcome a lot of like resistance. It's not really it's basically resistance for change. It's not really that there is a problem with the software or with pricing or hosting. These are not problems. The main problem is just resistance, like laziness for change, basically. So if there's no real reason to do a migration project, then you don't do a migration project, right? And I would do the same if I'm IT manager of a big company, never change a running system, right? Yeah, that's really a problem. Like forever I thought that what's needed is really good software. I think now we have very good software, and then maybe it's the hosting providers. We have very nice hosting provider partners. It's pricing, we have very good pricing. But at the end it's just you need to overcome the laziness often. Yeah.
Fear.
Hi. I'd like to know your opinion on why is Nextcloud better in achieving your goals than, for example, OpenDesk by Zendesk?
Okay. Do I have video recording here?
Just briefly.
There are two different strategies. We are happy to be part of OpenDesk. OpenDesk, maybe to explain it, OpenDesk is an initiative from the German government. They want to build Micro 365 replacement. It's funded by the German government. They have the strategy, so-called best-of-breed approach. So Nextcloud is the combination of 8 software products, and Nextcloud is one of it, but there are 7 others. Some people think that this best-of-breed approach is the best. You have specialization in a way, but you also have like completely different user interfaces, completely different deployment methods, completely different documentation, completely different everything. Nextcloud Hub is more like one thing together. I don't care if one or the other wins, we are in both. but these are the two different approaches. Yeah.
Thank you all, and thank you for that presentation. I have a couple of questions. One, you mentioned about the AI assistants, and you compared that to the OpenAI, ChatGPT, for example. So usually we use OpenAI for summarization and, you know, like just make the data looks better. Do you have a solution that we can deploy on-prem? That's the first question. And the second question, you mentioned about the data privacy and that somebody can pull our data even if we train it on, I don't know, like use Teams or OpenAI and so on. But also, there are statements like, for example, in OpenAI, if you get the paid enterprise or Teams license, it says that the data won't be used for training. And there are some other statements where it says, like, your data will be private. How much do you believe in that?
Okay, two questions. So first of all, I did not have enough time to talk about the AI stuff more. So the way we do it, that we have flexible backends there. So you can, as an administrator, you can enable different backends for the Nextcloud Assistant. There is a backend that connects to ChatGPT. It's not recommended, but it works. There is a backend for like a completely local AI. This is like the recommended way, where everything we do runs locally, but of course you need to have a stronger server with a GPU in it is recommended. It also works on a Raspberry Pi, but it's a bit slow, but it works. And then there are also options to work with trusted service providers. For example, we have partnership with IONOS or with Plus Server or with OVH in France, and they all have a nice LLM as a service product, and this can also be integrated. So you have the different choices there. We also provide some fine-tuned models and based on the standard open source LLMs that exist there. So obviously we work with the usual Falcon model, the DeepSeek model, the Llama models, and so on. We all support them, or the latest OpenAI that actually released an open source model. We support all of them, but we also have specialized models, for example, trained with like education, school data, which are specialized for that. We also provide this as additional LLMs that you can run locally. So there are different options you can choose from, and you can also combine that. You can say the translation service should use this service, the summarization this service, the transcript service this, and the picture generation or file transfer thing and like a different one. So there are different options you can model them together. And then second question, how much I trust OpenAI with that. I find this a really weird statement from them, because obviously to train their data, they're sucked in the complete internet, right? I mean, they use the complete internet, if it's allowed or not, as training data. But I should believe them that they don't use their own data. So basically they say they use everything except their own data for training. I don't find this like very credible, to be honest. Yeah.
Thank you. I have a small question about the technologies that you use, and two in particular that that are used, PHP in the stack, quite important, and also the JavaScript framework Vue. Do you see any evolution in their use or integration of other technologies like standards? One thing that comes to mind, because my experience with Vue is rather to move to web components, for example. It's like maintainability, yeah. Attraction, or community building, and so how is the future, yeah, for those technologies going?
I really believe in using the right technology for the right purpose, and there are lots of things that are just very nicely done in PHP quite fast. We profit from the huge community, we profit from the fast turnaround development times. But of course, nowadays we have this, I didn't have time to show it, but we have this microservices architecture where you can actually mix different technologies together. For example, all our AI stuff is obviously written in Python. That's the recommended way to do it, right? We have one of the high performance backends we have is written in Rust, the other is written in Go. Then we have the phone integration is written in C++, the SIP bridge. Our app store is written in Python too. So, that different technologies, we use the right technologies for the right job, and we can mix them together, and I think that's the right strategy. I don't really believe in like, well, this is the cool technology of the day. It's different technologies for different jobs.
Hi, over here. How much do you see the Office project as a hurdle for bringing projects like your one into the enterprise? Because from my experiences, you get Office, you get Exchange, and everything get bought in, Teams, SharePoint, and all that stuff, instead of using something else and then doing the backend stuff, so like Nextcloud.
Yeah, so there are two problems. What we're talking about is the bundling problem. There are two problems, the technology bundling and then the contract bundling. And for the contract bundling, we filed an antitrust complaint about the European Commission about that, because it's really a problem that if you just, most companies have a Microsoft contract because they have Windows machines or Office, right? And then it comes with like, hey, here's Exchange for free, and then there is like SharePoint for free, and then people use it, and you're stuck more and more. And then lately, during COVID, of course, lots of people used Zoom and Slack, but suddenly Teams was in there for free. Right, and then everybody's using Teams. I talked with some sysadmins. They came Monday morning into office, and then, oh, I have lots of support tickets about this new chat application, and Microsoft just switched it on, right? And then everybody has Teams enabled, and now, congratulations, using Teams. And then half a year later, a controller comes around. It's like, why are we paying for two chat applications? Can we not shut one of them down? And then this is why like Slack and Zoom are actually, the user numbers are going down, and Teams is growing. And this is a problem with bundling on the contract side. We're trying to fight this with the European Commission there. The second is the bundling on the technical side. We're trying to solve this to have more and more connectors, because if you migrate to Nextcloud, you usually don't do this in one day. You first migrate the files from OneDrive to Nextcloud, and later you migrate the calendar. For that we have the Exchange connector, we have a SharePoint connector, we have an Active Directory connector. We have these different connectors that can migrate one step after another. Okay, I think I'm throwing out here. Thanks a lot.